Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
Next week, people be rocking out to this guy. Toby Keith going to be there. What's going on, party people? Happy Friday. Toby Keith, Lee, I'm proud to be an American. Greenwood is going to be there as well. Three doors down. Little kryptonite. That's what you need to stop Superman, baby. Kryptonite. This is what we got. This is the best we can do. Kid Rock, I'm telling you guys, Kid to the Rock is going to show up. Paul Anka was supposed to, but he backed out. He's got some sort of family commitment that he cannot miss. It's going to be huge, whatever it is. On a Friday in January, I can only imagine how big that family commitment could be on a Friday mid-afternoon that you would want to skip the inauguration, Paul Anka. Probably because, do you have something better? That's what somebody should say to him. Do you have really something better going on? What are you worried about? What are you honest to God worried about, Paul? You're 75 years old. What do you think? People already think you're a racist because you're older and you're white. So you might as well just come and enjoy it, and it may be good for you. Maybe you'll start playing some more casinos. I don't know. Toby, though, you knew Toby was going to be there. Toby's going to be there big time. And Kid Rock, man, I'm telling you, Kid's going to show up. We are a week away. Still interesting. People still not sold on the idea of this old guy called President Trump. There's going to be a lot of fighting. There's going to be a lot of bizarre things. I think the first 100 days, you know, with Trump, just getting the feel of doing something different that I think will become eventually over time. We'll get used to it. I think the press corps is going to have a different time. I think the way things get reported are going to be different. I think the way we look at everything is going to be different. It's all going to be different because we have President Trump. Remember, 2 years ago, he's firing people, right? Now he's president of the United States. This whole thing is still bizarre. Just saying it. You're just like, oh, God, I'm sorry. President. This must have been what it's like in the 80s when people were like, Ronald Reagan, the actor, is the president of the United States? What? But the difference was Reagan had been an actor forever and he was a governor. This is totally different that way, though. It's so weird. It is. It's surreal. Look, I'm not saying anything bad about it. I'm excited. I want to see where he takes the country. I think he's going to do a much better job than most people anticipated. I think he's going to streamline some stuff. I think there's going to be some good things to come out of it. Are there going to be missteps? Absolutely. Are there going to be situations that are uncomfortable? Yes. Will he put us in awkward situations? Yeah, of course. Of course he is. I mean, all presidents do. Will he do it more than most? Yeah, probably. I'm not going to lie to you there. I'm not. But I tell you what, not everybody is buying, and it's not just the snowflakes. And I, look, take away, if you're a Democrat or Republican and you are there in Washington, D.C., it's the office, right? Because for a lot of these people, there have been numerous people that have been president that they did not like, but you respect the office. And Congressman John Lewis had this to say today about not only the president-elect, but whether or not he's even going to attend the inauguration next Friday.
You know, I believe in forgiveness. I believe in trying to work with people. It's going to be hard. It's going to be very difficult. I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president. I think the Russians participated in helping this man get elected, mm-hmm. and they helped destroy the candidacy of Hillary Clinton. I don't plan to attend inauguration. It would be the first one that I miss since I've been in the Congress.
Well, first and foremost, can I just say something? She destroyed her own candidacy by doing all the things she did running up to this. We found nothing. I'm still trying to think of anything that we found out in any of these emails that people didn't already believe in, minus the fact that she got questions. The biggest egg on the face didn't come As far as I'm concerned, other people may have a different idea. You can let me know. 323-538-2423. That's your text line. 844-DIG-CHAT, 844-344-2423. The biggest issue I found with all of the hacking, and again, what Russia did was absolutely wrong. What Russia did was deplorable. What Russia did is what we have done and what they're continuing to do and what we're continuing to do and what the Koreans and the Chinese. And this is what happens. This is where spies now make their money. My biggest issue, if I was a voter, didn't come between Donald and her. It came before that with the way the DNC and the way Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the way that all of those people in the DNC essentially did all they could to prevent Bernie from getting to the point where he was going to win the nomination. That, to me, was far worse than anything else. Outside of that, and by the way, that's a Democratic thing. It was Dems running versus Dems. I don't think anybody else jumped ship over to Donald Trump based on this. And nobody believes for a second, that, well, you know, now that I've read this Podesta email, of which most people have no idea who Podesta is, now that I've read this email or that email or this person's email, that I don't know if I can trust Hillary. I mean, the email's disappearing, her wiping everything clean, her not listening, her being evasive, her not taking questions. None of that matters. It's this email here. That's BS. So let's not relive that anymore. I, myself, find this to be a disrespect to the office. I think you show up to something like this. You're going to have to move forward, and you're going to have to work. Dare I say, if you don't show up in something like this, is this a payback? Is this a payback to I think some of this is personal between him and Lewis, and partly because Lewis is a huge fan of Barack Obama. They're both African Americans. Trump gave Barack Obama an earful and then some, and rode the coattails of him not being a citizen and the whole birther movement, the whole nine yards. Dare I say this is a bit of a payback? Possibly. But you show up. You show up. That's what you do. You show up. Continue, Mr. Lewis. Sorry to interrupt you.
I think there was a conspiracy on the part of the Russians and others to help him get elected. That's not right. That's not fair.
I don't think it's a conspiracy. I don't. I think the Russians tried to do all they could to throw influence behind there because they did not like her. I won't lie. I won't pretend. I won't be like the other people that I hear on all these, you know, talking shows, you know, sitting here right now yammering with the likes of Wolf and Jake Tapper and everywhere else across. No, the Russians definitely played some part in trying to do some stuff. But I think the way that you think that they influenced this thing was far greater than it really was. You're overstating the influence that the Russians had. James Comey probably threw a bigger wrench into this than anybody else. But the fact is, this wasn't one based on any of those things. In truth, this was one singularly because the man that ended up winning this spoke to the people that gave him the oomph to get over the finish line and to get enough votes to win. He spoke about jobs. He spoke about jobs. 8 years of Barack Obama, and they wanted another 4 years, essentially, of Barack's presidency in a lot of ways with Hillary running the show then. And they said, you know what? 8 years is enough. We're struggling. It is a situation here in the Rust Belt where we are tired and we are over this and we want to see what he can do. He's talking about bringing back jobs. He's talking about strengthening this country when it comes to trade, which hurts our jobs. He's talking about a lot of things that we think are going to help us. You're not listening to us, so we're going to go with him. It had nothing to do with the Russians. There was nothing in there about jobs. There was nothing in there about any of those things. He spoke those things. The people who believe their conspiracy theories already buy into that. Get over it. Maybe he just doesn't like Toby Keith. I don't know. Toby's great, though. He's going to take us to the red, white, and blue. Ha! The Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, C-H-A-D-B-E-N-S-O-N, chat at chadbensonshow.com. Text the show, 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. Man, it is Friday the 13th. Later on during the program today, we got so much stuff to get to. I'll tell you what, Dr. Chambers is going to join us. We're going to talk about breast cancer. And are women being treated correctly? There's a new study out of Denmark, and it says that maybe women aren't really being treated correctly. In fact, maybe we're doing more harm than good. Plus, we've got a cool interview. It's a super secret interview. Throughout the evening, I'll be giving you hints. Well, I will just tell you this. Friday the 13th. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Yo, 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 yo. You know who this is, boy.
Chad Benson.
Ooh, Friday the 13th. Ah! Democrats must be freaking out, by the way. The House took the first step today through budget resolution, mostly party line vote, to unwind Obamacare. This is the first step. And what they do is it's budget reconciliation. There's certain steps you got to take. I don't want to bore you because you can give a rat's ass about it. But if they didn't do it this way, then eventually the filibuster could happen to the Democrats. So they did it this way. It's the first step of which I'm going to say it. It's going to be an arduous task to do. It'll get done, but I'm still waiting for we repeal this, where's the replacement coming? That's what I want to see. That is. Today is Friday the 13th. People often wonder, what are the origins of this thing, Friday the 13th? We have two Friday the 13ths this year. We have today, obviously, January. And then we have October. How many movies, how many horror movies do you think are lining up to open up that weekend? Tons. What are the origins and why is it unlucky? Well, there's lots of reasons. Look at the Bible. Apparently, the way they look at it, there were 13 people present for the Last Supper for Jesus. And Judas Iscariot was supposed to be the 13th. Some people claim that, yeah, I mean, there's so many differences. You know, historians have claimed it was the day in which Eve bit from the apple. I mean, you know, there's lots of different things you look at from the Bible. On October 30th, 1307, Philip IV, who was my favorite of all the Philips, although I did like 9. He was good.
Hey.
I did. Hey, what? I like you, Phil, but you're not any of the 4th or 8th. You're not even Henry. He was arrested. I mean, he arrested hundreds of Knights Templars. And then burn them at the stake. There's all kinds of different things that people talk about when it comes to this. Here's some things you didn't know. These are some of the bad things that have happened on Friday the 13th. 1976, New Yorker Daz Bexter was apparently so afraid of the 13th, he decided the safest place to stay was where? In his bed. Mr. Baxter was killed when the floor of his apartment block collapsed that day. Do, 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 do. 2009, $13.5 million saw ride at Thorpe Park at its opening premiere, only to be shut down due to a computer programming fault. Spooky. 2010, a lightning struck a 13-year-old Suffolk boy on Friday the 13th at 1313, which is 1:13 for those of you who don't understand military time. Oh, my goodness. This is my favorite one. This poor guy. In the early 90s, a retired bus conductor, Bob Remfrey, vowed to stay in bed on the superstitious day after some seriously bad luck. The Welshman had crashed 4 cars, fallen into a river, and had been fired on the previous Friday the 13th. Crazy, isn't it? The number 13 has been considered unlucky for many years, even before Christ and the 12 apostles. The number 12 is historically considered the number of completeness, while its older cousin 13 has been seen as the outlier. When I played soccer in Europe, nowadays you see all the soccer players around the world, and they wear any number they want to wear. And, you know, it's and because they tie that jersey. They look at it as a money-making thing like we do. They tie that jersey to somebody. Right? Like, you know, like you know, was it 23? You know who that 99 is Gretzky. 23 is, you know, Jordan, those kind of things. Well, over there in Europe, we didn't have the number 13. So when we were only allowed to have two substitutes back in the day, so we had 1 through 11 as the starters. We had 12 and 14, and that was it. It was really weird. It's considered unlucky for 13 people to dine together, and first to rise will reach have some sort of serious misfortune, according to people. Many Western cultures, buildings are missing the 13th floor. In China, it's the fourth floor. Wow, 13th. You know, you do realize that the number 14 is still the 13th floor, but if you get rid of 13, you guys are aware of that, right? Is everybody aware? Are we getting that? Are we picking up what we're putting down? We love our superstitions, though. We do. In fact, I saw today how weird this was. I don't know if you saw this, Phil. You love yourself, air flight. Friday the 13th, there was a flight 666 that landed in HEL.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'd take that flight.
That's Helsinki, for those of you who don't know. Crazy, though. We get freaked out by these kind of things. The Costa Concordia cruise ship ran aground on Friday the 13th. Rapper Tupac Shakur died on Friday the 13th. The Chilean Air Force disappeared in the Andes on Friday the 13th. Lots of stuff. And, of course, that's the famous one that crashed where they were forced to eat their dead passengers. Crazy. We freak out. Man, I tell you, I love this kind of stuff. 13 is my lucky number, though. 13 is my lucky number. Don't freak out, kids. Most Americans aren't superstitious, they say. But I think we all have little things we do, right? Not super OCD, but we got little things we do without superstition. Just a little bit. I posed that on the old Twitter. How superstitious are you? 94% says no. 6% says I have a few. 0 say yes. I am. Think you're lying. Dr. Joe Chambers is going to join us next. Are women being treated properly when it comes to breast cancer? If you find a lump, should you leave it and see what happens? He's going to answer all those questions based on a new survey, a new poll, a new survey and study that's come out from Denmark. That's straight ahead right here on the Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson Show. Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
Breast cancer is, well, cancer in general is a bad thing. And breast cancer, there's a new study out about breast cancer. And we're looking at different ways to attack cancer across the board. It's one of these things where, you know, we've gotten so many different, you know, things that are flying at us. The information's growing daily on how we should fight this cancer or that cancer. And obviously breast cancer. And for women, you know, because all of us out there, you know, you're either a woman, you got a mom, you got a sister, you got a wife, you've got it can affect us tremendously. Like, cancer has touched every life, I think, in America and probably the world. Joining us now is Dr. Joe Chambers. Dr. Joe, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Chad?
I'm doing great. So there's a new thing out, a new study out about breast cancer, and this is 1 in 3 women have been detected using the mammogram, and they've been treated when they probably shouldn't be treated. But if we have cancer, shouldn't we be treated?
No, not necessarily. The thing about cancer, Chad, is that it's a very emotional word. And when people hear it, men or women, and you tell them, look, I'm sorry you've got cancer, they immediately go, oh, my God, I'm going to die. What they have to understand is that cancer is it's a generic description for about 100 different diseases. And what the study you're talking about did was this. I looked at a bunch of women who were screened with mammograms and a bunch of women who weren't screened with mammograms and looked to see if there was a difference in the number of women who had serious cancer. And there was really no difference between those who were screened and those who weren't screened. But the big difference was, in the women who were screened, those who had benign tumors tumors that weren't going to harm the women. There was a lot more of those in the screened women, and they ended up getting treatments, surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, that they didn't need. So the question that we have to ask ourselves are we curing women who don't need to be cured? Are we curing women who don't have any disease? Now, remember, in the medical industrial complex that I work in, I'm an acute care physician. I see patients every day. There's a lot of pressure on us to do this treatment, to do these screens. And what I want our listeners to understand, Chad, is that when you do a screening test, you're asking people to come on board who are healthy, to come to your office and have a test. And what you're promising them is this, that if they do this test, you will find a disease they don't know they have and save their life. The problem is that we don't really have really, really good tests. And we want to screen a large population, which is what we're doing in America. We're screening as many women as we possibly can for breast cancer. So we want to make sure that when we screen them, we actually find the disease 100% of the time. And we want to tell these women that they have the disease 100% of the time to be right. And we want to tell them they don't have the disease 100% of the time. But unfortunately, there is no such test. So often we overdiagnose people in screening tests and say to them, I'm sorry, but we think you might have. And after that, we go on to do what we call more specific tests. Now, the controversy with mammograms is, of course, it involves radiation. And it is putting women at risk. This isn't a new problem. It's not a new phenomenon, this worry about whether mammograms work or not. Because, you know, what everybody is scared of is this simple fact, that in the United States this year, there's going to be 250,000 new people, vast numbers of women, very, very small number of men, who will be diagnosed with breast cancer. And about 40,000 of those will go on to die. So what we want to do, of course, is get this disease early, treat it, so that they don't die, so that we get it in the very, very earliest stages. And that hasn't worked out so well for us. Now, when we get into these dilemmas in medicine, what we usually say is, look, the information is there. Let the woman herself decide if she wants to be screened. And I think that's a bit of a cop-out, because the women and men who work in this area, who do the mammograms, who read them, who treat the breast cancer, they're all in a tizzy about this. They can't quite make up their mind. Which way should we go? Should we recommend mammograms for everybody? So all of the societies out there, like the American Cancer Society, the government sort of bunch of experts called the Preventive Services Task Force, a group that I really like, they come out with different criteria. They come out with different messages to women. So when I read the study at first, I went like, oh my, this is really going to muddy the waters. And when it muddies the waters, women are going to be confused. One of the most common questions I get in my office and sometimes at dinner parties is, do mammograms really, really work and should I have them? So what I try to tell women is, think about it in broad generic terms. Think about your risk factors. Do you have a strong family history of breast cancer? Does a sister have breast cancer? Does your mom or an aunt? That puts you at greater risk. But a lot of women have no family history of breast cancer, and they still get it. And that's a little bit harder to tell them exactly what to do. So what
you
I
know, Dr. Joe, yeah. it's one of these things. You know, you hear the breast cancer, right? This is one of those things. Yeah. And as I was reading this study, and you talk about, you know, when to get screened, when not to get screened, then you hear the words, you've got cancer. Let's just say you hear the words. You know, we're hearing stuff nowadays of, you know what, let's not do anything. It may shrink. It may never grow. We can treat it as a chronic disease. And as we sit here as human beings, our first reaction is, what do I have to do to save myself from living? And not taking action doesn't sound like I'm saving myself.
But it could be. Not taking action sometimes is the smartest thing you can do. This isn't just a phenomenon, Chad, This isn't just a phenomenon with breast cancer. We also see it in men and prostate cancer. We were screening them for decades with a thing called PSA, prostate-specific antigen, and then telling these men they had prostate cancer and subjecting them to surgery and radiation and chemotherapy and all the rest of it. And we found, you know what? A lot of these tumors are benign. The most famous benign tumor in breast cancer is ductal carcinoma in situ, so-called DCIS. under the microscope, Chad, it looks like cancer, but it doesn't behave like cancer. It just stays there. Usually doesn't invade. And what most people are thinking now is that this is maybe in a small number of women will go on to be breast cancer, as in invading other tissues and threatening her life. But for most, it probably doesn't. The problem for us is we don't know which ones of these will or will not. And this has become so controversial that people want to take the word cancer out of the title. Because when you tell a woman that she has this ductal carcinoma inside you, guess what? She wants her breast cut off. She wants therapy. She wants it done. And men are no different when it comes to prostate cancer. So what I think we need to do as a society is sit back and say, you know what? Cancer, generic term, there's 100 different diseases in this. And most of them are not going to kill you. So when you hear these stats of saying like zillions of us have cancer, most of these are pretty benign. They're not going to affect our life. And we have to accept this. And because we've built this emotional thing around the word cancer, it's hard to do. You know what? If you come into my office and you have congestive heart failure, that's as nasty a diagnosis as telling people they have an aggressive cancer. Because a significant number of people every single year over the next 5 to 10 years will die from that congestive heart failure. But yet there isn't that aura around it when you tell people you have congestive heart failure.
Yeah, there is an aura, right? Because, I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I'm 46 years old. We're talking to Joe Chambers here. We're talking about cancer and the new study that one out of every three women are probably misdiagnosed and mistreated for cancer. But when I was a kid growing up, Dr. Joe, it was it was the C word. You didn't talk about it. Like if somebody got cancer, the neighbor or something, it was just there was this mysteriousness that you just didn't do. And it's so built into the psyche of America now that it's still something we can't get rid of.
It is. When I was a kid, Chad, the horoscopes and the newspapers wouldn't put in the sign cancer because they felt it would upset people. We need to get away from this, and we need people to understand that we don't fully get what cancer is. We know that it's a problem in the cell. We know that it's growing too much, and we know that sometimes it invades other places. We know that, but that's really all we know. And we know that it's a genetic disease, that sometimes you're born with a predisposition to get it, and then sometimes you acquire it during your life. But when I was a kid growing up, even in medical school, what they used to teach you was that your cancer was related to the tissue where it came from. And if it's lung cancer, it comes from your lung. If it's breast cancer, it comes from your breast, and so on. But now we're beginning to understand the genetics of this, and we're understanding things in a different way. We know, for instance, that some advanced lung cancers may have more in common with advanced ovarian cancers and will respond to the same kind of therapies than other kinds of lung cancers. So it's much more complicated now. But what we have to get back to when we're thinking about all of this all the time is that when we want to screen somebody, we're taking healthy people and we're telling them we're going to do them good. And it's incumbent on us, it's really important for every doctor and everybody involved in that world to say that when we take healthy people, are we doing them more good than harm? And what this Danish study is saying is, you know what? We're probably not. Now, this may sound confusing to women, but what they have to understand is that this is one single study. And what I tell my patients, what I tell the women that I know in my personal life, is that probably before the age of 50, I wouldn't get a mammogram unless I had really bad family history, like my sister had breast cancer. After 50, I would get the mammogram. And the big difference between pre-50 and after 50, and I'm not trying to scare people heading up to 50, is that benign tumors, these small tumors that have no consequence to the woman, are much more common when you're younger than 50. And serious breast cancer is much more common after 50. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't get breast cancer that's serious before 50 and benign tumors after 50. I'm not saying that. But generally, that's what it is. And the emotional part that's really hard, Chad, for people to grasp is this, is that there are women listening to our show today, to your show, and they're saying to themselves, what is he talking about? I had a mammogram and it saved me. Or there's a man listening to us and said, it saved my wife, it saved my daughter. What is this guy on about? We can't go, though, by single individual cases. What we have to look at is the big studies like what the Danes did and say, overall, are we doing more harm than good? And this Danish study is clearly saying we're doing more harm than good. And we need to think about it over and over and over again.
We got about a minute left. You know, talking to Dr. Joe Chambers about cancer and breast cancer, and are we doing more harm than good when it comes to mammograms and treatments for certain forms of it or certain, you know, tumors inside of there. You know, we got about a minute left, and I want you to answer me as best as possible. You're hearing it more and more that we should treat some cancers like chronic diseases rather than try to wipe them out. What is that about?
What's that about is saying that, just say, for instance, you're a 78-year-old man, and somebody tells you you've got prostate cancer. Well, unfortunately, as you get older, your chances of dying of heart disease or some other problem will get you before the prostate cancer. So what they're saying to some people is, you know what, with your age group and with all the risk factors you have for other problems like heart disease, treating this prostate cancer is not worth it for you because something else is going to be a terminal event for you. It's going to kill you, in other words. That's what they're saying. And what they're saying, too, is just like we can't cure hypertension, high blood pressure, we can't cure diabetes. Some of these tumors are just there, and don't worry about them. Get away from the emotional side. Tough. It's tough for us to accept that. But that's what we have to say, that not all cancers are equal. Not all cancer is going to kill you. And you should listen to your physician. If you have any doubt whatsoever about the cancer, get a second opinion.
Fantastic.
Never going to...
It's crazy, Dr. Joe, the way, again, like you say, you get that second opinion, and I'm always amazed, and you enlighten us here when you come on. His name is Dr. Joe Chambers. You can check him out, Dr. Joe Chambers On Call. As always, my man, I appreciate you coming on, and you have yourself a good one, and stay dry out there, okay?
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Again, cancer, it's an emotional word. It is an emotional thing. The Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter, C-H-A-D-B-E-N-S-O-N. You can tweet the show, at Chad Benson Show, simple and easy. As always, this is Talk 650 KSTE.
Yo, DJ, drop that beat, partner.
Oh, dear God, no.
Do you have any questions?
You're listening to The Chad Benson Show.
That's me. That was a great interview. I'm telling you guys. Some of it's it's psychological. We worry about superstitious days like today. You see what the mind can do. And when you don't talk about stuff, when you're not open about stuff, when you... It's interesting. I think Dr. Joe, said a lot there about that. And remember, we come from a time, especially a lot of you listening, because, you know, I'm fortunate. When I look around and I see and I talk to a lot of my listeners, you know, I've got listeners across all age spectrums. We don't find that in talk radio. But for a lot of us who are in our 40s, and above, we came from a time where you don't talk about certain things, right? You know, you never talk. Like if somebody got laid off, God, you don't talk about it. The big C, that's what it was called. There are certain things you don't talk about, and we can't talk about that. And you know what? You should be, you shouldn't put that stigma around anymore. You should take the stigma off, and I think that's a portion of the battle that'll help you mentally. Let's look at the playoffs, shall we? It's this weekend, NFL playoffs. I was joking with Phil earlier today. I said, hey, you know what I should do, Phil? Because I do a show in Sacramento. I do my show nationally. I said, you know what I should do? I said, I should do, when I do picks next year, we'll give half the picks one way, and then we'll give half the picks the other way. That way, at least I got them. People are like, man, he got them all right. Oh, let's see here. Texans, Patriots, that's tomorrow. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't really see the Texans having a chance. The Patriots are I think, on their way to the Super Bowl. And their biggest matchup is going to come next week in the AFC Championship game. In fact, I think they're 2 touchdown favorites tomorrow. Yeah, you're not beating Tom Brady at all. Sorry, it's just not going to happen. That's the way I feel. Look, they play the games for the reason, but this would be a massive upset, and I just don't foresee this happening. By the way, it's Tom Brady's 32nd playoff game, meaning he's played 2 extra seasons. Think about that for a second. That's insane. You've also got tomorrow the Seahawks and the Falcons. This is a chance for Falcons to move forward, a chance for Matty Ice to be the man, as they call him, Matty Ice in Atlanta. They're at home. They had the week off. But something about Russell Wilson, something about the fact that he just seems to be feeling good and they seem to be doing well. I worry a bit about their defense, which normally doesn't happen, but they're missing people. But Matty Ice, man, probably going to be the MVP of the NFL this year. I still think the Seahawks get it done. We move to Sunday. Now, Originally, this was supposed to be a game that was supposed to start at 5:20, but now it's been pushed back to 8:20 Pacific time, which is it's kind of late. Pittsburgh taking on Kansas City. Good game indeed if you're Pittsburgh. You've already thumped Kansas City, and despite the fact that Kansas City's had a better record, despite the fact that they seem to be poised to do something, you're taking on Big Ben, Le'Veon Bell. My prediction is here is a solid win because I just don't think Smith can get it done. So Steelers right there, kids. You put your money down to Vegas. All right, and finally, the big game of the weekend, I think, which is the Packers and the Cowboys, everybody's excited about, as you should be. You got Dak. You've got Ezekiel Elliott. You've got the Witten. You've got the mystique of the Cowboys. And is this America's team rolling again? And, oh, my God, two rookies doing all of these things. This should be it. But then you got Aaron Rodgers, who's playing better than anybody has, maybe in history, over an eight-week period. And I don't foresee that slowing down. It's two rookies taking on Aaron Rodgers. And even though it's in the house of Jarrah, I just have a feeling the Packers are coming out of this one. You'll have the Seahawks and the Packers and the Steelers and the Patriots. It's going to be crazy. Get ready for it, kids. The Chad Benson Show Facebook, at Chad Benson Show Twitter. It's the Chad Benson Show.
The Chad Benson Show.